Well,
no, not at all. Not at all. So do you want to introduce yourself and say where we are?
Sure. My name is Richard Raya. I'm running for city council in Oakland, District 1, which is North Oakland. And we're sitting in my backyard here on a beautiful Friday morning in North Oakland.
So tell me about District 1.
District 1 is a very fascinating district. So it is North Oakland, and it stretches, it's very diverse. It stretches from Emeryville to where I am. So it goes from Emery. Here's the list of neighborhoods, kind of the swath of neighborhoods. So from Emeryville to the Golden Gate, to the Longfellow, to the Santa Fe, which is where we're sitting right now. From the Santa Fe to the Bushrod to the Temescal, up to Rock Ridge and Upper Rock Ridge and the hills. It's very nice, big swath of very diverse set of neighborhoods.
So who are the people who live here, and what do they want from their representative?
Well, the people, like I said, it's a real diverse array. My neighborhood is kind of a funky little neighborhood, you know, artists and working class folks and you know, just young families, you know, might be the only place where they can afford a place in the Bay Area. But of course, it stretches up to much wealthier areas as well. What people want, I think, even though we're such a diverse district, is we want a city that makes sense, and we want a city that can find some common ground. In all this diversity, I think we're desperate for some common ground and a path forward.
Just a last note about the district in terms of propensity to vote and the turnout. How does it compare to the other districts?
We're actually, I believe we're the highest turnout district. It's amazing. As part of my campaigning, I go door to door, and I have these lists to help me decide who I'm going to talk to, and the list will identify who is a high turnout voter, so somebody who's voted in the last four elections or five elections. And I will be walking some districts, and every house is a high turnout voter, and it's amazing. You know, that's Oakland. We're an active community. We're an engaged community, and we're passionate about our politics and our beliefs, and I can see it on these printouts. Wow, these folks are voting in every single election.
Wow. So they're definitely paying attention.
They're paying attention.
When did you decide to run?
I decided late last year in the fall. I announced at a foster care center just because I come from a background of having been homeless and having faced a lot of challenges, and I wanted to announce to kids in a similar position to where I had been, to let them know that, yeah, you know what, you may be here right now, but your possibilities are endless. And that's where I announced. It was in the fall, and it was sort of under the radar. It was just, you know, kind of a small group of folks and folks who are definitely not connected to mainstream media outlets or anything like that, right? But that's about when I decided formally to run. I'd been thinking about it for a few years now. You probably know I was the budget director for the Alameda County Public Health Department. And we were doing a great job there of maintaining services and balancing our budget, even during the recession, and revenues were dropping from the state and the federal government. And I just saw over and over again that we could, as a system, could be doing more. The county, through partnering with the city, could be accomplishing a lot more if we were leveraging our resources, if we were sharing information, and if we were working toward common goals. And I didn't hear our electeds talking about that, either at the city or the county level. And not even just talking about it, but it to do that requires a relentless commitment to meeting, to collaborating. It's work in the trenches, And I didn't see any of our electeds doing that. So that's when I thought, you know what, I'm in this business to make a difference. And at this point, if I really want to make a difference, it seems like I'm going to have to run for office and for city council. And before that, I had never, my goal was never to run for office. My goal was to be a civil servant.
So I'd love to hear more about that, what you said about leveraging resources and working together.
Well, so when I was the budget director for the public health department, we had revenues dropping from the state and the federal government. Everybody was experiencing this. Everybody in government was experiencing this. And I was in charge of a $120 million budget with 600 staff. And we knew that we were going to be facing some major shortfalls in the upcoming years. So we started to set aside money wherever we could. And we ended up setting aside $6 million 3 years in a row. And we turned around and used that money to prevent layoffs when the revenues didn't come in from the state or the federal government. We also used that money to maintain services. And the way that we did it was through leveraging resources. It was through teamwork. It was through us, meaning me and the department heads in the public health department, sitting together at a table and having tough discussions, adult discussions, honest discussions about what we were facing and how we could pull together to basically freeze vacancies, you know, not hire, not fill positions that were vacant because we might not be able to afford them. But in turn, that meant that we had to do more with less staff, or we had to continue doing the same amount of work with less staff. That's where the teamwork came in. That's where using data relentlessly to make sure that we could, you know, do the best job possible. That was teamwork. That was leveraging resources. That was being holding ourselves accountable to clear goals. But when I talk about leveraging resources, I'm talking about something much bigger than that. I'm talking about the fact that the kids that are the most vulnerable families, the most vulnerable kids that are in our safety net system are accessing this broad array of programs from CalWORKs to Medi-Cal to food stamps to sometimes they're part of they're in the foster care system, they're in the child protective services system. All of these systems are actually dealing with very often with the same kids and the same families. Yet these systems, I learned over time, and everybody, not everybody, but a lot of folks have begun to realize this. These systems are not sharing information. They're not coordinating efforts in general. And they're not rallying around common goals related to these kids and these families. I believe that is the future of government. That is a way to leverage resources and just unify our approach around common goals and do what we exist to do, which is to help families, help kids that are in need, that need that safety net in order to, you know, to get to the next step and become part of, you know, part of society.
You talk about cost savings. I guess that sort of naturally leads to the question of where in the Oakland budget you kind of see opportunities for cost savings.
That's a really good question, and a lot of people, and it's a fair question, and a lot of people ask me about that, particularly because Deanna Santana has already found a lot of the low-hanging fruit around cost savings. She did what we did at the public health department in the sense that she was able to freeze vacancies, move staffing around to where they're most needed. You know, she, in particular, she did this when we lost redevelopment and we lost all that funding for staff. She was able to prevent major losses in services and even major losses in staff through this, through this smart budgeting, smart staffing. At the same time, city employees have been also making other sacrifices like taking furlough days, like contributing more to their pensions and benefits. So certainly we are, as a city, we're getting down to the point where we're starting to, you know, hit the bone. We're gonna cut bone eventually. So it's just gonna require. I hope to partner with Deanna Santana in that, and the city staff, in figuring out how we can continue to do more or maintain levels of service with less revenue. But that's one side of it. In order to balance a budget, you not only minimize expenses, but you maximize revenues. And I feel like as a city, we have to recognize the position that we're in right now in this regional economy, this Bay Area economy, which in many cases is booming in terms of the knowledge sector, the green tech sector, folks moving from all over the country, all over the world to be part of this economy. A lot of folks that are moving here and a lot of folks that live here, they want to live in urban, walkable areas around transit stations. And Oakland is blessed to have some stations that are underutilized, underinvested. And if you see what happened with Uptown, where we built some high-density housing around a BART station, not out in, you know, residential neighborhoods, but around an underutilized BART station, you see the transformation of the community. You see that it could catalyze new business, attract businesses like Pandora's, like the Pandora's. And I just feel like we're sitting on this wonderful opportunity. We've got $11 million in new revenue this year, unprojected revenue, and that's a sign that something is on the upswing, that revenue is coming from new businesses starting up, new sales taxes, new transit occupancy taxes. The city is on the upswing. So I don't want us to approach our problems with just cutting, woe is us. Where else can we cut? We've already cut to the bone, and what are we going to do? And we're not going to get out of this by panicking, and we're not going to get out of this by turning on each other. And we're going to get out of this by recognizing our assets and our opportunities at the same time that we make the hard decisions that we need to make around managing the budget. But we need to build on what's working, and something is definitely working in Oakland. Everybody knows New York Times said we're the fifth best place to visit, right? And in part, it is because of that renaissance that is so visible to us in some parts of Oakland, particularly in the Uptown area. So again, I want us to build on that. And I want to be really clear, though, that it's not just about attracting highly educated young people from other parts of the country. It is also about creating a diverse community. My goal is that with these development opportunities, that we practice what's called development without displacement, where we incorporate the diversity of Oakland in these developments. And so there's different terms for this. It's diversity. It's development without displacement. It's equitable development. But I'm not talking about inclusionary zoning. I'm not talking about something as broad as inclusionary zoning, but similar to that. So here's what I'm talking about. When we do transit-oriented development, we have to keep in mind that there a good friend of mine calls it the three E's. Economy, equity, and environment. So economy, transit-oriented development should be good for the economy in the sense that it creates jobs, it catalyzes new businesses, helps to attract business, it expands the property tax base and sales tax base so that the city's budget can grow. So it's good for the economy. It's good for equity in the sense that it very often is it can be a mixed income. A goal of it would be to be a mixed income community where there is affordable housing and where the jobs that come from constructing this this new community has a local, there's a local hiring component, there's a living wage component, there's a community benefits component. So that's the equity side. On the environment side, there's the these communities actually allow us to drive less. They're walkable. They're because of their density and their vibrancy, and they're connected to BART stations, so you don't have to drive to work or other transit modes. So it helps the Bay Area grow in a sustainable way. I mean, we know that the Bay Area is projected to grow and keep on growing for decades to come, in part because of our region, booming regional economy. But we don't want us to grow out into the suburbs where we end up paving over green space and farmland and increasing vehicle miles traveled by cars and contributing more to greenhouse gas emissions. So this sort of transit-oriented development is a win-win-win, not only for Oakland, but for the Bay Area in general and for the climate.
Yeah, I feel that. wondering, talk about transit-oriented development. I feel like most candidates would probably support that and community benefits and local hire. What where do you see yourself sort of really differing from the other candidates?
Well, I mean, with regard to transit-oriented development, I'm the only candidate that has that as the sort of cornerstone of my platform. I feel like we're on the verge of this. I mean, we're sitting on this great opportunity here, and we should as a city recognize that, and then our electeds should help us rally around that. And more importantly, our electeds should put together a plan with timelines and goals that says this is where we're going to be in the next 4 years with each of these underutilized transit stations or transit corridors in the city of Oakland. Bring investors to the table, bring labor to the table, bring community to the table, and say, you know what, let's create a pathway. Let's minimize the uncertainty here. And recognize the opportunity and rally around this opportunity. I would love to be a part of helping us focus on that. To me, it is, it's low-hanging fruit for the city. It's building on what's working, building on what's great about Oakland.
Do you see other differences between yourself and other candidates?
Absolutely. I'm the only candidate that actually has experience balancing a large government budget, like we talked about earlier, $120 million public health department budget, 600 staff. I was directly in charge of that, held accountable to that, and just didn't just balance it, but actually created a surplus. I didn't do it by myself. And it wasn't like I walked into a room and said, hey, we're going to cut costs here and you're going to freeze those vacancies or you're going to lay that person off. It wasn't like that. It was teamwork. It was adult conversations. It was pulling together. And it was having clear goals. And we never laid anybody off because we were able to manage our budget that well because we could come together as a team and have tough discussions and figure out new ways of doing business and how to do more with less. The other big difference beyond that kind of real-world government budget balancing experience is that I've actually helped to also raise billions of dollars for new infrastructure. So I worked for an organization called PolicyLink, and I helped to build a coalition between the state building industry, school administrators, and community activists like Californians for Justice and public advocates and the ACLU. I helped to build this alliance to craft a ballot measure to raise bond money for the rehabilitation of old schools across the state, as well as the construction of new schools across the state. And it was very successful. Some of that money has flowed here to Oakland. It continues to flow, actually. It's such a big pot of money. But anyway, I also have that sort of experience of building the coalition, raising billions of dollars for new infrastructure. And to me, that's very similar to what we're going to need to do if we are going to move forward with a sustainable development plan here in Oakland over the next few years.
I'm interested what your assessment of the field is. Do you buy into this idea that there are, I heard one candidate say, there are viable candidates and non-viable candidates. Does that resonate with you at all?
Yeah, I find that statement interesting. It's funny to me because I don't think that way. I think everybody has a chance. To me, the beauty of this election is that none of us really are longtime camp, we're all pretty much equally unknown is what I'm trying to say. So we all have a chance. And what it comes down to is really getting out and talking to your neighbors from the Golden Gate all the way up to the North Hills and introducing yourself and letting them know why you're running and asking them what they'd like to see. This is very grassroots. It's very democratic. I don't think of the other candidates in terms of who's viable and who's not. I think about who is connecting with their neighbors, who can bring people together to help move the city forward. And I think that's what it's going to come down to.
Are there any you're more worried about beating you?
You know, I don't worry about what the other candidates are doing. I certainly learn from the other candidates when I hear them speaking. We're spending a lot of time together at different forums. And I respect all the candidates. And we have a very collegial relationship as we're all on the campaign trail together. I'm not worried about them. I in terms of, you know, thinking about, you know, whether or not they're going to win the race and or not, I don't focus on that. I focus on meeting my neighbors, and I focus on trying to bring folks together around some common ground.
Can you talk about some of the endorsements you've gotten?
Sure. I'm proud to say I've gotten this pretty unusual array of endorsements, from labor to business to social justice. So, for example, the Oakland firefighters have endorsed me. The Oakland Chamber of Commerce PAC has endorsed me. And Oakland Rising Action Fund has endorsed me. So these three organizations are, in my experience, groups that haven't traditionally aligned. And in my mind, that shows that I can bring these different groups together. And that's what needs to happen in this city over the next few years. We do need to come together on some common ground. And not just to be on common ground, but to actually craft a path forward with regard to public safety and with regard to economic development.
I'm wondering if you see any conflict of interest when you're approving the contracts of a group that has supported you, maybe with money or maybe with just their endorsement and their support. Does that make it harder to negotiate with them?
I don't know who I would be approving a contract for.
Say with the firefighters?
Oh, I see. No, I don't think so. Not at all. The firefighters told me that they endorsed me because of my budget balancing experience. They felt that I had a lot of substance behind my description of how I helped to balance the budget at the Public Health Department. And The firefighters, for example, have voluntarily contributed more to their pensions, I don't think, you know, they're team players. It was actually a great experience interviewing with them. They're total team players, and they recognize that in some cases we all have to make sacrifices for the good of the whole if we're going to move forward together as a city. So I don't foresee that.
I'd love to hear about your plan for making the city safe.
Yeah, absolutely. So, if I recently, not recently, maybe, you know, 7 or 8 months ago, read a book called "Don't Shoot" by David Kennedy. He's a Harvard criminologist, and he talks about the end of violence in urban America, and he lays out these cases where violence has actually decreased dramatically, as well as where relations between communities of color and the police department have improved and begun, and where a healing process has taken big steps forward. If you read the book, and you'll see that what is seemingly impossible, this endless violence, this seemingly out of control violence in Oakland, there is actually a way to move forward and to reduce that. It's called the ceasefire strategy. And what it asks a city to do is what a city actually should have been doing all along, which is collaborating with the community, with families, with clergy, with the broader spectrum of law enforcement, from probation to parole to the district attorney, as well as with social services like job training and drug and alcohol treatment, collaborating and focusing on the small number of guys committing most of the crimes. So what David Kennedy says is that on average, only about 5% of the criminals are committing most of the crimes. When you understand that, it makes the problem a bit more manageable rather than this kind of giant, chaotic mess that you have trouble finding an entry into, if you recognize that it's only 5% of the guys committing most of the crimes, you have a place to start. You have an entry point. So then focusing on these guys and having this wraparound approach that not only offers them a path out, but also, of course, very clear consequences if they do not choose that path out. but also the community pressure at the same time and the community buy-in to this process. All of these things have worked together to reduce crime, improve relationships. What I like to say about ceasefire is that it's data-driven, it's collaborative, and it's proven. And if there's something out there that is proven and that it can help heal the relationship between parts of the community and the police, we as a city, given our murder rate and given this, you know, sense of chaos with regard to crime, we really have no excuse to not start working on this immediately and relentlessly. And I'm happy to say that the city is actually moving in this direction. They've tried it before. They didn't implement it comprehensively, so it failed. They're trying it again. And my hope is that with the new council members coming on board, with a new dynamic at City Hall, and with a commitment to doing the hard work that collaboration requires, that data analysis requires, that we can make some big strides forward.
So ceasefire, implementing that would be a big part of your plan. Something a lot of the candidates talk about is, you know, how many cops, you know, we don't have enough cops. Do you think we need more? And I guess how would you get to that number?
Yeah, so we do need more. If you look at where the city of Oakland, how we compare to similar sized cities, we have a small police force, small but expensive. We're smaller than other police forces, but we're as expensive as bigger police forces. In terms of how we get there, and it's hard to argue against increasing the size of the police force when we have the highest rate of violent crime in the state and fifth highest in the nation. The way we get there is going to be part of that whole budget balancing process. I mean, we're going to have to be smart about how we about how we staff the police department. So, for example, there are police officers that are working on doing clerical duties, essentially. So some folks in the city have suggested, well, you know, when we are able to add staff to the police force, why don't we fill those positions with, why don't we civilianize those clerical positions, folks that are doing data entry or filing? They'd be lower cost and would allow those police officers sitting behind a desk to actually be part of the force out on the street. So that's kind of an immediate, smart budgeting practice. you know, and I suggest that I wouldn't suggest that if it was going to reduce the ability of, you know, police to provide public safety. But a lot of folks in the city, excuse me, believe that is one sort of immediate step we can take as our budget continues to see moderate growth. Beyond the smart budgeting that I talked about earlier, the kind of stuff that Deanna's doing that allows us to control our budget, control our expenses, we again need to focus on growing our budget, and that goes back to my sustainable development or my transit-oriented development plan. Build on what's working in Oakland. Build on the fact that we've got $11 million in new revenue this year from what's working, from new businesses starting up, from increased sales taxes, and a portion of that growth should be set aside for growing our police department, so that we have a department that is, you know, the same size relative to similar size cities.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. When you talk about attracting new investment, new development, I've tried to learn about it myself, and it's very complicated. And you talk to people, and their reasons for coming or not coming are so intertwined with the larger economy. I'm wondering, you know, what you feel like you've learned about that to know how to entice developers to actually come to your city.
Well, it's what I hear from talking to investors and developers and, you know, just small business folks and and the average resident is that they want the city to not appear to be so dysfunctional. They want our electeds to look like they're working together in a mature, transparent way, and that there is a path forward. Somebody literally said that. We just want to see the city have a path forward. So, you know, that's that, and that goes back to my transit-oriented development plan. I think we should rally around a four-year plan and look at our underutilized transit hubs, BART stations, and transit corridors, and say, and again, bring investors, bring labor, bring community to the table and say, what can we do here? What do we want to do here in the next few years? And how can we all get there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, one important thing to cover before we kind of wrap up is, you know, a lot of people are talking about, and I know the, when the Tribune did their endorsement meeting, the big issue was, you know, long-term structural debt. So I'm wondering, do you think it's a problem that requires, drastic is the word that's coming to mind, but you know, what does the city do about its long-term debt?
So, long-term debt is another one of those things where we're going to have to be smart and measured. We can't panic. We can't turn on each other. We have to pull together as a city and as a community to figure this out.
When you say turn on each other, do you mean like...
Meaning, this must mean we have to eliminate X amount of positions immediately, or, you know, cut benefits immediately and... No, we don't have to do that. What we have to do, though, is we have to pull together and we have to have a plan and we have to have some clear goals. Now, I'm happy to say that Deanna Santana, the city administrator, and her staff are working on a five-year plan where they will build in the annual commitments for the pension obligations into this five-year plan. And then once we have that framework, then we can think about where are we going to find the revenue to meet those annual commitments. And that's what it's going to take. It's going to take smart, collaborative, measured, measured approach to get these things done. So that's where I stand on that. I'm not ready to start panicking. I mean, we should definitely, this definitely has to be on the radar, and it is on the radar, and it is something that we have to figure out. And there may well be some very hard decisions that we have to make as a city and as a community. But until we have that five-year plan, I'm not ready to start making, you know, big statements about who we're going to cut and where we're going to cut, or even if we have to cut. I believe there's a balanced way out of this that involves both controlling our costs as well as maximizing our revenues through growing our city economy.
Mm-hmm. What else? What should I have asked you about that I didn't get a chance to ask you about?
Well, I think this is an interesting thing. I'm the only candidate here where I've actually been one of those kids that was on the verge of dropping out or did drop out. We have a very high dropout rate in Oakland. I'm one of those kids who had friends and family who were carrying guns or committing crimes. You know, I'm living proof that it doesn't have to be that way, and that each of us can change, and each of us can come together to turn things around. That's what I've been doing my whole life. That's why I went to work in government, went to be a public servant, because of what I think is the transformative power of government. Government is, you know, is where we come together as a community to solve big problems. It's where we come together to transcend our individual limitations. And that's why I'm in this business, and that's why I'm running for city council in Oakland, because I don't accept that... the dropout rate that we have and the crime rate that we have, I don't accept that those are permanent. I don't accept that we can't change them. I truly believe in my heart that we can change them. And that's at the root, that's at the core of why I'm running. And it's not just that I've had that experience, but I've actually managed large budgets. I've raised billions of dollars for new infrastructure. So it's that combination of of life experiences and hard professional skills, and just being a collaborator. And I think that's, you know, that's what I want to bring to the city.